Welcome back to the program. One of the things we hear a lot about with respect to Hollywood is the lack of women in the role of writer, producer, or director. Certainly one of the most successful in that area was Nora Ephron. She was a three-time Academy Award nominee. She wrote the screenplays for Silkwood, When Harry Met Sally, and Sleepless in Seattle. Her last film was Julie and Julia. She had success as a playwright and as an author. She had a fascinating collection of husbands that included Dan Greenberg, Carl Bernstein, and Nicholas Pileggi. And writing was in the family, as her sisters Delia and Amy were both screenwriters as well. Nora Ephron died yesterday at the age of 71. She and I had the opportunity to talk about aging, about health, about what it meant to be old, the conversation we had back in 2006. Nora Ephron, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Delight to have you here. In reading all these stories, particularly the ones about aging, it does seem that men are catching up these days. They're getting worried about aging, too.
Do you feel that you are?
Yes, every day.
What would you say was your... What do you feel bad about? I feel bad about my neck, and I'm happy to discuss that with you, but I'd like to know what you feel bad about. Probably not your neck.
Hair.
Yes,
not
I
as
knew
thick
you were
going
to say that. That's
of course.
That's the male equivalent to the neck for women is that you don't quite have as much hair as you did, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there it is. Sorry about that.
There you go.
Yeah. Happens to women, too, by the way.
Now, is it all about your... To talk about your neck. When did you start... You said about 42 you started worrying about this?
No. I started worrying about my neck for other reasons when I was young. But the truth is that most... That your neck starts to go when you're about 43. Your neck is sort of the canary in the mine. Your neck... You can do all sorts of things to keep from looking older, except where it pertains to your neck. So your neck is like this big amber light blinking at you in the mirror, if you are silly enough to look in the mirror. Mm. And it's the thing that is saying to you, if you can see it, because, of course, I've changed all the light bulbs in my house so mm-hmm. I can barely see myself, but... It is saying you're getting older. And when I began reading things about getting older, and they were all so cheerful, and I kept thinking, what is wrong with these people? Don't they have necks? By the way, lest you think I am superficial, which I, by the way, am, but deeply superficial, I'm not being deeply superficial. I'm just being superficially
right.
superficial
Fishel,
because
right.
it's not the neck per se. It's that the neck is the thing that is really saying to you, you don't have as much time as you think you do. No matter how great you look, you've got to figure some of these things out. Not that they're easy to figure out, but anyway, that's me and my neck in a nutshell.
Do you think that the next generation? The you know, our children, their children, will worry about aging in the same way?
Oh, I have no idea. I mean, I don't think they're going to do anything the same way. I don't think we're doing anything the same way that we did 5 years ago about anything. I think we are in a completely different place about aging from people 15 years ago because there is so much you can do to delude yourself that you're not going to die. And never mind that there are genuine medical things that have happened that are making people's lives longer. But the number of, you know, little plastic surgery things that can be done to make people look younger. And, of course, one of the things I talk about in my book, I Feel Bad About My Neck. I feel I should just throw the title
of
in there
course.
In case someone just tuned in. But you know... One of the things in the section on maintenance, because maintenance eventually can become a full-time job if you're getting older, is hair dye. When my mother was my age, well, when my mother's friends started getting older, you could only dye your hair two colors in America. You could dye it blue if you had gray hair, or if you once were a blonde, you could dye it pink, which was sort of called strawberry blonde. This thing we have now where well over 50% of American women are dyeing their hair. I mean, this is what is making women look so much younger. It makes you feel younger when you look younger. That's the truth. It changes all sorts of things that women at 40 are not gray-haired. So that's all of this, all of these things which seem like they're just about fashion manage to trickle down in all sorts of ways so that you can compete in the job market because you look younger and all of these things. I don't think anything is going to be the same ever. Things are changing so fast we don't even know what's going on.
Do you think most people worry more about how they look as they're getting old or actually their mortality about dying?
I think that people worry about how they look until they get it, that it's also about mortality. And some of them get it from having some health crisis themselves, and some of them get it from a health crisis with a friend. You almost never get it otherwise. I think one of the most interesting things is the amount of denial we're all capable of. And in some weird way, almost nobody really believes they're going to die until the moment they believe they're going to die, if mm-hmm. even then. You know, we all think, oh, we're going to be the only person who doesn't, or we're going to have some kind of fabulous thing where we glide to 90 without any problems and then just sort of nod off during a good movie. But, you know, it really depends on who you are and what happens. I mean, there's no question that for me, when my very closest friend died almost 2 years ago, it was that kind of thing where I just began to think, what does this mean? What does this mean that you can truly, you know, all the things we think. Someone just asked me the other day, because I've been on this book tour, what is going to be your last meal? Well, I'm happy to answer that question. But the truth is that most people don't have last meals because they're too sick to eat them. So, and I'm not even trying to make a joke out of it. It's the truth. So it makes you think you just have to, you know, you have to savor every second that you're given. You can't have any bad meals. Because this could be the one.
Well, part of the
what are you having for lunch?
Right. Part of the denial filters down to us saying that, you know, if we're 60, that 60 is the new 40, 40 is the new 30.
Yes, and by the way, 30 is also the new 40. Because there are so many things younger people are now doing as if they're older. The number of young people who are having Botox and major plastic surgery, as if they were 10 years older. So 30 is the new 40, and 40 is the new 30. It's extremely confusing. Everyone's coming every which way at one another.
And, of course, as long as we continue to get these messages and all of these products are available to us, we'll just buy into all of it.
Yes. Well, we'll buy into some of it because some of it is worth buying into. It's not as if it isn't. It's not as if some of this stuff doesn't actually make you look, quote, better, unquote. If you care about things like wrinkles, which, you know, we'd all like to be so mature that we don't, but we do.
But, of course, as you mentioned before, the amount of time it takes for maintenance continues to grow exponentially over the years.
I know, but somehow I managed to squeeze it in.
We'll just all be getting up earlier to squeeze
right. All
that in.
That's right.
Talk about how it impacts relationships, the concern about age, all these things we've been talking about, relationships with our kids, with the next generation. How do you have that conversation?
You probably want to have a conversation about you probably want to have a pulling the plug conversation if you need to have one. But, of course, I signed one of those living wills, so it's on a piece of paper somewhere. But what is there? One of the things that's so confusing about this whole thing is, what is the conversation you mean to be having, even with yourself? Because we're all really happy to be here. That's the bottom line. We are thrilled to be alive. We are grateful for every minute. And at the same time, you wake up in the morning and look in the mirror, and there's a new horrible thing that has happened to you from the night before. And you go, what is this? So so you're constantly swinging between attempting to be spiritual, which is a lost cause for me, but I do try to keep my eye on the main thing. I'm alive. I'm happy to be alive. And then I'm just swung into the other thing, which is, what am I going to do about that? You know, the thing I keep talking about is carbs. We've all been very good about carbs. That is to say, I have spent a lot of my life not eating bread and not eating pasta. And then you suddenly think, well, what if the thing you die of has nothing to do with all this bread that you haven't eaten in an era when there is the greatest bread that has ever been since the dawn of civilization? There has never been better bread than there is in the United States of America at this moment. Even France does not have bread as great as we do at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And what if you get hit by a bus in 10 minutes and you didn't have a piece of bread this morning? How ironic would that be? I'm being funny, but you know what I mean. It's like if your last thought is I should have had that donut, you're doing something wrong.
Something very wrong. You mentioned before, and you talk about in the book, this cheerfulness that sort of is part of the aging industry. All these books telling you that you should be cheerful about this. Where does that come from?
I don't know, and I sort of keep meaning to ask people, because when you see these books called The Joy of Menopause or Your Happy Golden Years or all these kind of, and by the way, I don't mean that one can't have happy golden years. I just mean that these books are so leave out the other part of the story. And I guess people think that people don't want to buy books that are downers, but the truth is that everybody knows the truth. Everyone who gets older knows the truth about getting older, which is that you do feel bad about your neck. And so I don't, you know, my theory when I started to write this book was, well, let's at least tell the truth here. Let's at least say it so that somebody will be able to read something that corresponds to what their experience is.
You mentioned that even young people, 20-year-olds, are beginning to engage in their own preventive maintenance. Talk a little about that.
Well, you know, it's that when I was growing up, there was really only one thing you could do if you were young, and that was to have your nose fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Or have a nose job. That was the you know, the first of the major plastic surgery things. Now, there is so much you can do. And teenage girls grow up now so much more pathologically obsessed, not just with their bodies, but with the possibility of fixing them. And I'm putting everything in quotes, but because I'm not on television, you can't see me making little quote marks around everything. But, you know, basically, 40 or 50 years ago, except most people understood that you sort of took the hand you were dealt and worked with it. Now you can just go to a doctor and say, I would like to have my stomach taken away. I would like to have breasts that are bigger. I would like to have breasts that are smaller. I would like to, you know, change the stuff you can do to your face. We've all seen it on those reality television shows. It's amazing. It's amazing and shocking and weird in a way. So that is what young women grow up with. We older women are basically into a kind of thing that mostly involves, you know, sort of keeping your finger in the dike, just trying to stay even, just trying through maintenance not to look a whole lot worse this year than we did last year.
Renovation.
Well, or, you know, just keep from turning into a bag lady because there's so much to do. And if you just let your hair grow in, there's no telling what you would look like, since most of us don't even know what color our hair is. But these young women can do this stuff that is way more, I mean, if you want to use a polite word for it, it's proactive, but it's, you know, there's just a huge amount of all of that stuff going on, and it's it definitely is going to get worse, or not to put a, is worse what I mean? There's definitely going to be more of it rather than less.
Sure.
It's not going away.
And men will be doing more of it.
Men are doing more of it. And in fact, I just bumped into a friend of mine about, I don't know, in August, it was about 112 degrees in New York, and he was wearing a turtleneck sweater, and I took one look at him in this turtleneck and thought, oh, he had the chin thing done. There's a very simple operation that men can do for under their chins, much simpler than for women, because they can hide the scar in their beard where they normally
right.
shave. And I know a half a dozen men who have had this amazing hair transplant thing. And you actually know who two of them are. You don't know who they are, but you have seen them because they're actors. And you would never know this operation is so amazing. It's so not that original plugs in the hair that everyone would laugh at.
Right.
It is brilliant, invisible procedure. Wildly expensive. Painful for about a day. And amazing.
You know, when you talk about not even knowing, you know, what your real hair color is, or somebody not knowing, you wonder what the nexus will be between all of these procedures as the proliferation of this continues and our own individual identity and how we perceive ourselves and who we think we are.
Oh, now we're getting very theoretical for yes. Yes, this is a really interesting question, isn't it?
Yes.
If you can change what you look like as dramatically as we now can, who are you? Because we all know how much our self-image comes from what we think we look like.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I don't know the answer to this.
As part of the changes that we go through in our lives now and reinventing ourselves, we'll get to reinvent ourselves physically as well.
Yes.
Nora, it has been a pleasure. I thank you.
Thank you so much.
My 2006 conversation with Nora Ephron.